When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, GTA 6. I'm GTA 6. Welcome to the GTA 6 week, where, funnily enough, it's actually the wind-up where I'm Scott Taylor, you're Josh Brown.
GTA 6.
GTA 6. It's everywhere. And we're not actually going to do a GTA 6 podcast. We have recorded some news already, and we'll probably cover it in maybe the news podcast when we do the main podcast later in the week. And for our foreseeable future, it will be GTA 6. But for today, for the wind-up where we do the latest games that we're playing or the latest games on the market and whatever the breaking news stories are, we thought we'd give you a little bit of a reprieve from the state of things at the minute, because GTA 6 did leak over the weekend. 90 videos uploaded online, which you can go find if you can find them before Rockstar and Take-Two do, because they've been going on a bit of a copyright spree, taking all things down. We'll have lots of coverage on the channel. All the audio versions of those will be on the audio feeds themselves, so just hang fire. Hang 10, because there's a lot of frame-by-frame analysis going on, mining that stuff for gameplay features, etc., which we'll get into in separate recordings. We thought we'd just do all the games that we've been playing, so we'll get to eventually. Essentially, the Modern Warfare 2 open beta, Metal Hellsinger, Return to Monkey Island, and Wolong Fallen Dynasty. However, me and you clashed a little bit over the weekend. Clash at the Castle, you might say it's a wrestling reference.
Is it?
I didn't see the show, and I watch it at AEW. But still, we clashed over the idea of the role of synopsi, you might say, in game storefront pages, because and we thought we'd do this for the podcast, because we definitely very much wind each other up over this subject matter.
Yes.
Which is to say that I don't read game synopsises ever.
This was such a classic us moment, because to give everyone listening to this a little bit of context, the other day, the last time Scott and I were in the office together, you had finished Immortality,
yes,
which I raved about.
Or as much as I thought I had, anyway.
Wind up. Oh, yes, you had at least played a good chunk of it overnight. And we got into a bit of a discussion on that. In fact, it took up all of our lunch break and then some, but don't tell our bosses that.
No.
Where we got into like the game and stuff, and we disagreed a lot, but there was one moment in that discussion that floored me, and it was when you said, I said the game was about, if you don't know, an actress who disappeared, and you said, does it tell me that? And I said, well, it tells you in the description, the brief description of the game on the Game Pass, it tells you in the trailer, and you said, I don't read descriptions, I just download things.
Yes.
And that blew my head off, the fact that you don't even read the line description of the game before you get it, but please tell me more.
Well, if we're talking about things that blew our minds, you resigned certain plot points to the about page on the game's main page, which I said at the time, and I'd want it for the record, is I would only go to an about page if I want to learn about the team that made the game. That's where the staff are.
Yeah.
But yeah, the synopsis, I like going into something completely fresh. I'll look at some screenshots, maybe I'll look at a snippet of gameplay, maybe I'll get a sentence of what it's about on Twitter or something, but I like just going in off the barest of stuff possible. Same for movies, same for TV shows. I'll do as little as possible, and I've just never read to read game synopsis. What the hell's the plural of synopsis?
I don't know.
I never read them. Let's go with synopsi, Alan Partridge. Okay. But yeah, I never read them. I just don't think of it. I look at the screenshots, maybe I'll look at a few seconds of a trailer,
yeah,
and that's it. And I'll just figure out the game mechanics or what it's about afterwards. That was my main thing with Immortality, not to make this an Immortality podcast, but it was that the core thing you're doing in that game is finding out what happened to this woman who went missing, using footage of her career, but the game doesn't tell you that's what you're doing. The game just presents itself as an archive of footage and waits for things to happen.
Yes.
Which they take about half an hour or whatever for that to kick in. And if you're just aimlessly going through footage, you don't really know what you're doing. That was why I messaged you in the first place, just saying, what is this? What am I doing? Why am I just rewinding and zooming into footage or match cutting to find other stuff? Which led to you going like, well, I kind of knew why I was doing that because I saw it in the synopsis, which my thing on paper is that it's a fundamental failing of a game,
right,
to not instill some sense of purpose or whatever you want me to get to later on.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be relying on the synopsis or the about page.
This is the thing, not to just repeat our off-camera conversation about this, but my argument, and we definitely would be, my argument for this was, in your case, you didn't get the drive for the game in the game itself. Mm. And that is a totally valid criticism. But my point was, if you wanted that extra bit of information, which I personally don't even think you need and would have liked to have not had while playing the game,
mm-hmm,
what I meant was, if you wanted that extra piece of information, you could have just looked at the trailer, or you could have just read the one line description of it on the Game Pass thing, and that's
so
kind
which
of
I
where
said
we,
I shouldn't need to.
Yeah, that's kind of where we fractured, yeah, and it just kind of blew my mind that I understand the appeal of just jumping into a game and downloading it, but I don't think I've ever downloaded a game that I know literally nothing about. I don't need to know much, and I'm definitely not searching for a big plot description or anything like that. But I need to know what the core of the game is. We're going to talk about Hellsinger. I needed to know before jumping in that was a rhythm-based first-person shooter, at least, rather than just jumping in based off the cover of the game or anything like that.
See, whereas Metal Hellsinger did get me in off the artwork itself. I did know it was a rhythm-based shooter because you couldn't really get away from that. It was very much led by that. My thing with Immortality is that it should have just, or could have been, a one-sentence descriptor of solving the mystery of why this woman went missing, this Hollywood actress went missing, and you don't get any of that. The game just sets you off and says, here's how you rewind, here's how you match cut, and that's it. And they want you to stumble into stuff. And when you do, it becomes this thing. That's why I played it for 3 hours in one go till about 20 past 2 a.m., was because once something happens in that game, you're immediately like, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. Okay, I'm hooked and I'll sort this all out. And I had a great time with it. Overall, I think it's brilliant. I just think that it's a hell of a risk to not make sure the player knows why they're there.
Yes.
And I think that the fact that they resigned that information, because if you go on the about page, inside Immortality, it's almost like a tutorial. It's like, well, here's what you're doing or whatever. That stuff for me should have been in the tutorial. I think resigning anything to an about page or saying, you could have got that purpose elsewhere. That like I said, for me, that's a fundamental failing of the game. Like in a movie, when someone says, oh, that character didn't make any sense, it's like, well, if you read the book, it does this. For me, it's extraneous stuff.
Right. It's not. And this is why I think it's worth talking about, because I think it's so subjective from person to person and how they define their own personal drives for a game. We talk about that about page, which kind of sets out the kind of core mysteries that the game has to offer. It doesn't say why they happen, but it kind of gives you a few pointers to look out for. And I read that halfway through playing the game because I just thought, why not? It's there. I want to see what the crack is. Mm-hmm. And I actually regretted reading it because it gave me too much context. Whereas for another player like you, perhaps, that might have been vital context that they needed to have a drive in the game. And I think it's interesting because, from personal... But just speaking, from my own personal perspective, when I jump into a game now, I expect to have its purpose to hit me within 2 minutes and to be handheld throughout that experience. So even I, who loved Immortality for the first 20 minutes of it, was kind of shocked that I didn't get that.
Yeah.
And it kind of made me feel uneasy, but then I didn't think that was a failing of the game. I thought it was actually a failing of other games to, in their kind of way of conditioning us to expect a lot of focus straight away. And I was kind of thinking it's weird that we're at a position, or at least I'm at a position where if I don't get that immediately within the first 10 minutes or something, my mind starts to wander. And I wondered why that is, because it doesn't happen with movies. I will give a movie a full 2 hours before it gets to the point and stick with it. But games are kind of different.
Well, I think because the movie being passive, you just have to sit there and it'll unfold in front of you. But you would get tired, if it was 2 hours of one character in a room with nothing else. Like, I think you'd feel like you wasted your time, unless you had some profound reaction to that over time, but it's going to unfurl in front of you. Whereas, like, invoking player agency, it's an active medium, unless it's just that thing of sitting there going, like, well, I don't know what I don't know what you want from me.
Right.
I want to know why I've downloaded this. I want to know what this is for. And then, you know, is this the trick that the game plays on you? And arguably it is. But for me, the fact that they put all that stuff in the about page and it's on the description or whatever, just put that in the tutorial. Like, all you need, because you have a tutorial telling you how to use this archival footage thing. Yeah. All you need is a line in there to say something about, so go forward and look into this woman's career. Something, anything. Right. For my thing, it's almost like it's a flaw that they put it in the about page, because they sort of after the fact went like, well, we are going to have this. We recognize that there's no drive in the main thing and it's here if you want it. But like I said to you when we argued about it like the other day, anything in an about page, I'm just not going to go there, because every other game, it's the staff credit roll or whatever.
I understand that fully. And I guess my final thing on this topic would just be to say I'm so pleased they didn't put that in the tutorial.
Right.
I like that it's there to find if you need that little bit of drive. And I like I said, you know, I wish I didn't see the about page even when I knew two of the three mysteries that I was looking for. You know, I almost wish I didn't even see the one-line description before I downloaded the game, because I thought the game did a good job of the more you played, peeling back layers of those mysteries. And I guess, again, that's why I come back to the subjective thing, is why I want to throw this out to people who are listening in terms of, you know, what do you personally need from a game's opening to hook you in? Do you just need a kind of evocative art style that you kind of want to explore? Or do you need core motivators, like, you know, a series of mysteries that can drive you forward? And I just thought that was interesting, the way that we had radically different views on how much information this game needed to tell you to be a success.
I think as well, yeah, because I want to round this out. Like, I think my thing is that I'm happy to not have a tutorial. I don't need hand-holdy stuff. I don't need anything, really. I just need to know what's available to me. My whole issue with it was that it didn't really let you know what you were playing with. You had the direct controls, but I was like, to what end? And it's like, well, you can fast forward and rewind this person's life. Cool. That is cool. Like, all the footage that they recreated to be in specific time periods is very, very well done. But I did that for about 20 minutes, and just sort of sat there going like, okay, now what? Like, I don't get it. And that's the thing where, like, you'll give the game a benefit of the doubt. And I don't think necessarily that argument for a hand-holdy tutorial, like, you know, if you sit there with something, you give it about 20 minutes, you give it about half an hour, and it still hasn't presented itself, then I think it's valid to be like, well, what do you actually want from me?
Right.
And like, yeah, so I think we'd end up going round and round in circles.
Totally.
Because the thing is, when you do stick with it and it plays its hand, it's an immaculate hand.
Yeah.
And then when you realize what you're in for and you start kind of having all these interpretations of what you're actually looking at, I get that this is vague as hell. It does work, and they play that card, you know, to be like, oh, you're quite lost with this footage, what's really going on? And then bam, you get this incredible reveal. You have to kind of just stick with it. It does work overall, but I think that like, it all kind of rebounded around this idea of what role advertising and marketing and a synopsis plays in a game or in a product, because they're often handled by separate teams anyway, especially when trailers get cut for movies or trailers get cut for games.
Yeah.
Like, they're just given a bunch of assets, stitch it together. That's where you get spoilers and trailers and everything. And something like Netflix's descriptions, they're barely ever remotely competent. It's always the most minimal thing they can do, which is, I guess, is one of my reasons that I never factor them in.
Right.
I'll just go like, I'll just, if it's interesting, I'll dive in, I'll see what it does.
Yeah.
And my thing with Immortality was that it was too aimless.
Right.
Or not communicating a reason to exist at the beginning, which is also its greatest strength if you can stick with it.
Totally. And, like, you know, going back to what you said about, you know, feeling lost for the first 20 minutes, like, I would agree. I also wondered whether I was playing the game correctly, but I was also hooked from the very first scene that you get. And, you know, I think that's the big difference, or the big differentiator, that, you know, I was watching the first clip you get in that game, and I already wanted to know more about these movies, about, like, these fake actors that are being talked about. And that was enough to hook me. But if that's not enough to hook you, that's when you get into the no man's land of, well, I'm just clicking through things and I'm like, and I don't know what to do and I feel confused and frustrated. It's a bold risk.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we will move on from this, but even in that instance, the game's tutorial is like, here's this actress in a TV talk show and the game's still tutorializing. So it's like, hey, you can rewind footage, you can speed it up, you can pause it, and you can match cut, which is like pick an element in the scene and it'll match cut to where a similar looking item was somewhere else. So even as you're doing that, I'm fast forwarding through that dialogue. I didn't get the stuff that you did because the game's telling me to fast forward and rewind. So I was doing that. And then when I match cut, there's one part where she sort of laughs. She's in this TV interview and the Marissa Marcel, I think is the actress name. She laughed, so I match cutted her laughing, and it took me to a sex scene. It took me to a different film altogether that she filmed in like the 60s, and it gave me this like sex scene thing. So I was like, okay, I've just triggered this whole like naked sex scene thing. This is cool or random or whatever, but what the hell am I doing? And it just compacted that what is this game feeling, and then the game pops up and says, congratulations, you've done enough, you're ready to explore the life of Marissa Marcel. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I don't know enough of this stuff. But yeah, if anyone else has played through Immortality, get in touch with us, or let us know what you think of the role that synopsis plays in games. Do you tend to research much before you dive in? I think for me as well, there's a lot of nuance in if it's a Game Pass thing, if it's PlayStation Plus, if you've paid for it anyway, quote unquote.
Right.
You might as well dive in versus putting a price tag on it. I do want to move into the games that we played, though, because we'll have another discussion about the role of demos and stuff in the future, because me and you were talking about if you're going to play something anyway, are you better off diving into that full product versus an hour trial and then resume it like a month later or something? And we can get into all that stuff in the future. I think there's going to be a lot of conversations on game leaks and the role that leaks can play in a game's rollout and how early we want to see our games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And because of the GTA 6 stuff going forward. So I'll revisit that stuff, but I do want to touch on the things that we played, which is to say that we both played the Modern Warfare 2 beta.
Yes.
The open beta, which you did manage to get in like a day early. They gave us a lovely little code.
Yes, Activision sent us two codes, which is very nice of them.
And, so massive shout out to them.
We've jumped into it. I was expected, at least for me, that I was going to enjoy this because 2019's Modern Warfare reboot is maybe my favorite Call of Duty in that
series.
Yo, dude,
it's a bad, yeah.
Because I love the original Modern Warfare 1 and 2, and I loved a lot of the Black Ops games, but that just had something extra. It updated the COD formula in a really noticeable way for me, like the way that they changed the feel of weapons to be kind of way more weighty, way more impactful, that even, games that have come out since then haven't replicated. Cold War didn't replicate that. It went to a more arcadey feel.
Totally.
In Vanguard kind of continued it somewhat, but didn't iterate on it that much. Modern Warfare 2, to me, feels like a next-gen version of Modern Warfare 2019, for better or worse. Mm. And it was just great going back to that style of game where the guns feel big, the recoil feels, quite ferocious in a lot of ways, and you just feel like you're, in a really intense war zone again.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that initially straight away.
I will massively back that 2019's like reboot of Modern Warfare or whatever you want to call it, I think is the best first-person shooter feel that we have on the market. I think Titanfall 2 is the best first-person shooter like of the last 10 years or whatever, but Modern Warfare, like you said, the feel of the guns, the weight that you have when you're running around, you can mount on the corners and stuff. I always like that, getting the drop on someone. Modern Warfare 2 is interesting because when I first put it on, it was so similar to 2019's that I was like, it reminded me of Modern Warfare 3 when that first dropped,
right,
where like it was Activision starting to experiment with a yearly rollout, like a few years in, and it was like, we just had Black Ops, now we had Modern Warfare 3, and that was the first one I dipped out on. I had every single one to that point, but I just didn't need it at that point, and I dropped off it because it was just a bit too much of the same. And so when I played Modern Warfare 2, ironically, even though it's the reboot of Modern Warfare again, but it is the newest one, this year's one, I started playing it and I was like, yep, it's some COD.
Yes.
Like it's always that same thing. We have the same comments, not me and you, but the whole community has the same conversation every year. We talk about the spawns, we talk about the time to kill, we talk about weapon variety or whatever you get at the beginning, and the weapon customization and everything else. And sure enough, on social media, people are talking about the TTK being lower, which it is. You definitely die faster in this than you did in Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
But thankfully, it's not as low as Black Ops 3. But it is the things like that that I think you're kind of forced to like almost granular way zero in on and be like, well, do I want to pay money for this? And when it's just a small set of tweaks, it's still giving you a COD. And for my money, because they start me out with the M4, which is like my signature. I just love that anyway. This is my signature weapon. It's not. I use the M4 a lot. I was almost immediately fully satisfied by the beta to the point where I was like, I can go on this and have a deathmatch, but I don't need the full version, let's say.
Right.
Because it's just giving me where I left off. Like it's just more of it. But if you play more of it, and obviously I played a lot of it across the weekend, you start interfacing more with the little tweaks, the times of kill, the fact that perks roll out across the match, which is a massive thing. But I don't think they explain that stuff very well. Like, no. I don't know what your thoughts on the perk stuff is.
No, I would agree, you know, with because it's a beta, it just sort of throws you all of the systems, or at least the systems that it wants you to unlock, and then kind of tells you to acclimatize to them on the day. And kind of my brain, almost in the same way as it operates when someone is trying to teach me a card game I don't understand, just like ignores it. So I was like, I don't even want to dig into this right
like
now.
Like Homer Simpson just singing to yourself.
100%. I was like, just get me into a game, let me enjoy the game feel, and I'll analyze it from that perspective. But yeah, I would echo what you said in terms of this being a granular update. You know, Call of Duty always does feel granular, apart from, you know, the increases in fidelity that 2019's game brought to the table. And this definitely is, you know, looking at the minor tweaks and seeing how they add up. And fortunately for me, those minor tweaks were appreciated this time around. I think already out the gate compared to the last two releases, spawns feel better. The time to kill, for me, even though it is very quick, it feels satisfying. Right. And this still gives you enough time to react in certain gunfights. Where it still takes skill, it still takes precision with your aiming to get those kills. And for me, the biggest plus, and the thing that I enjoyed the most, was the level design as well. I'm so pleased that they kept 2019's bigger maps and kind of more approaches to how you navigate through the level. Like you said, being able to open and close doors, jump through windows, climb up here, you know, mount down here.
You can mount higher now as well. You can do the whole thing where you pull yourself right up on something that's like way higher than you would be.
Totally. They just feel way more detailed for me and more intricate and less kind of like a film set. You know, sometimes when I'm playing Cold War or even Vanguard to an extent, the levels feel like static film sets because I can't arbitrarily go through this door, I can't peek out this window or jump out that window or whatever, and this just feels more dynamic to me.
I've seen a lot of people bringing in Rainbow Six Siege comparisons in terms of, you know, you really have to play the angles game in this, which is the whole thing with Siege and other sort of tactical shooters. I'm blanking on something else that was recent that was a tactical shooter, but I guess it's in terms of, what's that VR game that you loved that was... you know, that was
Firewall.
Firewall. Yeah. That was very, you know, here's your loadout and you will only win if you're picking the angles and scanning the scenery and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Call of Duty, you can, you know, by default can be very run and gun. But I feel like they're trying to, ironically, with the TTK being so low, you can finish a dude in like a quarter of a second or something. You're still encouraged to play the angles game and, you know, like watch out for every different corner that someone might be coming around or whatever. But the perk stuff, like they've tried to make it so that you pick your loadout and you pick your perks. They've also got rid of some stuff, like they've got rid of Dead Silence. I think that's the one that people are annoyed about.
Dead Silence is like a power-up you can get now. Right. That it's kind of like how it works in Warzone, where you pick it up and you press the two bumpers and it kind of like respawns that way, if I recall.
There's some that they've gotten rid of, and there's some stuff that overall perks roll out across a match, which it feels a bit like a response to Halo Infinite, because Halo Infinite's whole thing is that all your power-ups are just on the map somewhere and everyone starts the same and it's on you to go and find those things and use them for a bit, which I love. I think in Halo's, in the context of a Halo match, it works a lot better. Most of the time here, when they're just like popping up on the screen saying, you just got bloody whatever, I don't factor that in. I'm still running and shooting the same way.
Right.
But I think overall, it's solid. I just feel like, you know, over like this year, they've not really shown that much of it. And then now it's like, okay, the open beta is out, very much dwarfed online by Queen stuff in the UK, or GTA 6 especially. I don't feel like I've seen anybody talking about this. Maybe your feed's more full of stuff than me, but I've not seen a single soul.
It's probably just how the algorithm works, I guess. Mine's set up to feed me Call of Duty stuff. So I've seen some discussion on this, but it's funny that you mentioned, like, you could, well, when you first messaged me about it, you said you could probably take or leave this version. And I think that's totally valid, because part of the reason why I'm so excited for this release is not Modern Warfare 2 on its own. It's Modern Warfare 2 combined with Warzone 2.
Right.
And when I was playing this beta, I was excited for Modern Warfare 2, but I was more tantalized by the prospect of these mechanics, these weapons, these systems being brought over to that Battle Royale mode. I was thinking about, you know, some of the levels that might be included. I was thinking about the gunplay, thinking about like the new weapons that I might be able to use in this Battle Royale mode. And to me, they're so synergistic at this point that I factor both into the same package, whereas to a lot of people, they'll only bother with one over the other.
Honestly, I forget Warzone exists. Honestly, I mean, I need to do a Twitter poll, because I don't know if I'm the outlier not caring about Battle Royale. Like, you think of the statistics on everything from PUBG to Fortnite to Warzone, I do not care. Like, it's not, I've done my time with Battle Royales. I played a lot of Fortnite in 2017, yeah. And a lot of PUBG, and a decent amount of Warzone, but I was playing that. What was the original version of that? Like Blacklist or something?
Yeah.
Black Zone, man. Or whatever
what
it was
called. What was it called? Oh, they did some Black thing. Ops, yeah.
Yeah. They did like
Blackout, maybe.
Yeah, Blackout, yes. And they did an original version of Call of Duty Battle Royale. That was when I first dove in. Like, oh my God, it's Call of Duty Battle Royale. But Battle Royale as a thing just doesn't get me at all. Whereas, because the feel is so perfected now, and the your altercation with people, it happens so immediately, and it's such a test of reflexes, mixed with different tactical options, like the playing the angles game, or putting a doorway between, a half open door between you and someone else, and then picking them off, or whatever it is. That just makes me want to do deathmatch over and over and over again, or team deathmatch. Because it's so immediate. And the thing that I loved the most in 2019's Modern Warfare was just going on Shipyard and just playing Shipyard over and over again, just constantly plugged in, like anime-style wide-eyed as the whole world flies past me and I'm just killing over and over again. That's my Call of Duty.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Right. For this long, how long have we been playing these now? 15 years?
Maybe
since
longer,
Modern Warfare 1?
Yeah.
I know what I want from a Call of Duty, and unless you're going to throw something in my way, like to make me engage with something,
right.
Gameplay systems-wise, to show me what you've got that's new, I'm just kind of going to enjoy a COD and shoot some dude. I mean, I'm not boasting, but I've managed to come first in both of the first matches I did, and I was like, I'm kind of done, to be honest. I'm not even being challenged by this.
I love that. And I totally get it as well, Like you said, gamers like us, we played
a lot
this
of
multiplayer suite for so many years, 15 years. We played so much team deathmatch, so much domination. And yes, Modern Warfare 2 is bringing in a lot of new modes that are, like you said, fashioned in the style of games like Rainbow Six, these more tactical modes where you only get one life and stuff, and they're fun. But to me, it is almost, the game itself is almost supplementary to Warzone 2, because that's what elevated the whole experience.
Right.
Like, I like team deathmatch as much as the next person, but that's not the kind of multiplayer experience that's going to engage me for 2 full years in the same same way that it did in 2007. Mm-hmm. What engages me is the dynamics of a battle royale like Warzone, and similar to you, Scott. Like, mm-hmm. I've played a lot of battle royale games, didn't click with any of them. Didn't click with H1Z1, didn't click with PUBG, didn't click with Fortnite, mm-hmm. Didn't even click with Blackout, you know, Call of Duty's first attempts. In fact, I thought it was quite bad.
Yeah, same.
Warzone for me was such a cut above all of those other experiences that I almost don't even include it alongside them because it feels like it's a singular entity into me that has replaced the core COD experience in a big way, where to the point where I know I'm going to get Modern Warfare 2 and enjoy it,
right.
But in 6 months' time, it's going to be an area that I jump into to level up guns so I can use them for Warzone 2, and that's ultimately what it's destined to become for me.
That is, that's fascinating because I wonder how, because Warzone is free to play now, or a version of it is,
yes.
And I wonder how they'll market everything and how they'll sort of differentiate Call of Duty from Warzone going forward, because people refer to Warzone, have a game of Warzone, play some Warzone separate to Call of Duty. For me, it's more just where COD sits in amongst everything else. I always have a casual game that sort of is the glue between my bigger games, and it's like when I'm on the way to the next thing, when I'm thumbing through a menu or a UI or a dashboard or whatever, I'll have a couple of games on insert thing. And for a while, across like this year or last year, it was Knockout Kings. Knockout City. And which I absolutely love. Now I went back on Rocket League for a bit. And then Call of Duty will be that casual game for a bit. But that's all it's going to be to me. But yeah, I think I'm curious how it lands. Like I said, I feel like the interest is there. Obviously, it's Call of Duty. And with it being like the sequel to such a well-received game in 2019. But at the same time, for me, they've played it quite safe. And like it's... you are just 15 years in, you are just tweaking things like how fast are we going to die, how quick is X animation or whatever. So we'll see what happens. But in terms of other shooters, we both dove into Metal Hellsinger, which is kind of an out of nowhere game. I was just looking up the developers before. It's a Swedish dev called The Outsiders. It's their first game on this level, especially. And it's literally Doom meets like Crypt of the Necrodancer with a like heavy, like really heavy metal soundtrack, not necessarily thrash metal, some parts are. But the hook, especially for me, because obviously I'm way more into metal and heavy stuff and whatever than I think you are, is the soundtrack. And it is the fact that they got like Matt Heafy and Arch Enemy and all these big names to like write songs for the game, which when you're essentially you're just playing Doom, except that there's always like a beat counter running through the middle of the screen and you do more damage and you get more points if you time all those hits with that beat. So you're trying to sort of cock a shotgun and blast. And then, like, twin pistols, you're hitting each one of those gunshots on the beat. What did you think of the whole... You finished it. I'm about halfway through. What do you think of it?
I liked it. It's neat, and I enjoyed it more than I expected it to. Than I expected it... What's the phrase? I enjoyed it more than I expected to. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, you know, I've had my fill of kind of Doom-esque shooters. Mm. You know, this year alone, I played Shadow Warrior 3, which is very similar to this game in terms of its enemy and encounter design. Mm. Obviously, it doesn't have the rhythm-based feature underlying it all. And I'm not a huge fan of metal. It's not necessarily my genre. Not that I dislike it. It's just... You know, if they made a rhythm-based first-person shooter that was soundtracked by Phoebe Bridges-style music, I'd have probably gone for that more, is all I'm saying.
I would still love that if they did, like, a really, like, lo-fi. I don't know who Phoebe Bridges is. Some sort of more tuned-down indie version of this would be great.
Exactly that. But I think it nails a lot of the fundamentals. You know, once you get into the flow of it, which is quite difficult to learn, because you're kind of fighting against your first-person shooter instincts to move and shoot as fast as possible, to rearrange your movements to hit the time of the beat. Once it got into its flow, it was, you know, really excellent. And like you said there, when you're playing Call of Duty and on shipment, and you get the anime eyes and the world's going by you. I got that for the final few levels of this. My issue is it's just incredibly short. Like, I finished it all in like 3 hours. And yes, there are reasons to replay different levels because you unlock weapons that you can then take back. You can do challenges within those levels, try to get high scores and whatnot. It just felt like more of a proof of concept than a fully fledged game. And it made me more excited about the sequel than it did for this title. Like, I've played through it for 3-4 hours now, and I finished the campaign, and I've got a few good high scores, and I kind of feel like I'm done with it already.
Yeah, I think it's like it puts you in, when you get in the pocket with it, like if you like the music, you already find yourself getting in the groove even from the main menu. Like, I love the fact that the way that it layers the music in-game for the most part works. Like, based on the multiplier, it'll build up. Like, you'll get sort of ambient stuff, then you'll get drums, you'll get the guitar alongside, and then when you get like a times 16 multiplier, it puts the vocals on top. I have an issue with that, where even if you're like right on the edge of like the multiplier going from 16 to the one below it, it just cuts off the vocal track. They're not mixed. So like, well, they all, you know, like it's just cutting off. If you imagine all that parts of a track being like, you know, in a line kind of thing, you're just cutting off one of those tracks. So even if you're mid word, and then you, you know, then you kill the next demon, you're back on that multiplier. The end of that word comes back in again. It can sound a bit glitchy. That's my thing. My only thing with the way the music is sort of put into it is like the specifics of how it's mixed. But I think when you're in that pocket, if you love really heavy metal anyway, and you can get on board with more screamy or guttural vocals, then slaying a bunch of dudes in a Doom style acrobatic first person shooter as Matt Heafy from Trivium is like screaming his guts out, that's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah.
Obviously entirely subjective, but I think it's also very impressive how much they nail a first person shooter model. Like the fact that, like I said, it's one of their first games, and it just, it feels very competent immediately. Like there's a lot of stuff coming at you in terms of the feedback from shooting enemies, like big high scores popping off. Like I think the weapons feel really meaty and like, you know, very like heavy. You know, and you are getting a steady rollout of weapons as well. I just got a crossbow last night. The thing that annoyed me with it, and it's kind of just an overall, almost like a synesthesia thing, where you've got such a perfect mix of like visuals and audio, and I'm plugged into this game that I'm in the pocket for it. When you deny a player that, it reminded me of if you get killed in the middle of like a streak in Overwatch, or you get killed in the middle of something in Splatoon, everything is so perfect and pristine and heading in a certain direction that when you're suddenly severed from that and given like a respawn screen or whatever, I've only died once in this so far, but it reminded me of that feeling of like, oh my God, I just want to love this. Just let me keep going. I just want to love this. And the thing that keeps hammering that home in Hellsinger is certain enemies that you have to change up your approach a little bit too much. And for me, like you fight some shielded enemies, which unless you have a weapon on you that does splash damage, you have to switch to the sword to take them out. Unless there's, I mean, you can kind of get around them and maybe shoot their arm as they're trying to shoot you Halo style. But you're switching weapons on the D-pad. And it just, it's one of those things where you've got so much coming at you. You're trying to hit the beat. You're like in the pocket kind of, that it's quite easy for it to become a bit overwhelming in those specific moments, like factoring in new enemy types and keeping the beat.
No, it is 100%, especially early on when those enemy types are introduced for the first time, like because you're playing a demanding first person shooter that will try to hurt you as much as possible, especially when it comes to the bosses. Uh-huh. But at the same time, you're trying to be cognizant of the beat, trying to keep your attacks on beat to make sure you do the most damage and then get the highest score. That is kind of overwhelming. And I think that people might be put off by the first couple of levels because they're getting to grips with the concept of the game, because they're getting to grips with the difficulty itself, as well as how the weapons work. And quite truthfully, I don't think you get the shotgun is one of the first weapons you get. I don't think that's a good weapon to start with because it's it's cumbersome and it doesn't, you know, click to the beat in this in as natural as a way as I think the pistols do.
Right.
So I would swap the weapon rollout around.
Yeah.
But that said, I agree and disagree with you in terms of the enemy design, just because it is a roadblock when they first turn up, but they also did eventually encourage me to not just rely on the pistols for everything. I had to
True.
And I had these two sick kind of like boomerang style swords that I was throwing.
Nice.
And they decimated those shield guys.
Right.
So it was cool to have the pistols and then that as a backup. And eventually when you get like the weapons like that, you can just press Y and B. Mm-hmm. I was playing on the Xbox to swap between those primary and secondary weapons. Mm-hmm. And it was integrated within the flow much more naturally than it was to start with. And the only reason that I don't mind that flow being impacted is that it does reward the high level play in that regard. Like it is a reward, and it is satisfying to hit the 16 times multiplier for as much of the level as possible. So
true.
You get the vocals for the full thing. And I think because it's a high score based game, that is fine by me. If it was just a kind of vibes based game where the focus was, you know, having a good time, I would probably criticize it more. But because it's kind of, it's meant to be more demanding, that
that's
the reward works in terms of when it comes all together.
No, that's definitely true. I think my thing is just like player communication. Like you come up again, you're fighting so many enemies that you're sort of told like hit them in beat in sequence or whatever, and you're fighting these different dudes that I think if they came at you in rhythm, it might teach you a different way to take them out. Like if they hit you and like blast or like or whatever, and you had to sort of like go with that to interrupt their hit or something, because you are doing fatalities or finishes on beat as well. That when you, but like I said, when you come up against someone who just has a shield, and you can still get points for nailing the gunfire. But it's like in that moment of keeping the beat, you're trying to figure out a way to take them out.
Yeah.
Whereas like I feel like that figuring that out should be a bit more natural to the way that the game overall, like, it flows overall. Because like I said, it has to take you out of that beat to teach you something, which you've then lost the vocals, you've lost the song. Like,
yeah.
you feel so stupid when you lose all that stuff, and it's like, okay, I have to build it back up again. My only other qualm with it is that I'm 4 levels in and I've fought the same boss every time. I don't know if that's the case for the whole game. But,
the bosses are the worst part about it, because there's so much potential for really interesting bosses. Yeah. I mean, you're literally going through hell, and yet every boss bar the very last boss, which is sick, and that kind of makes it worse, because the final boss is visually spectacular. The song is great. I don't know if I can spoil what song it is.
I don't think people care about song spoilers.
No one will care about that. It's the vocalist is the guy from System of a Down.
Oh, Serge Tankian.
Which was the song that a vocal style that I actually recognized. So yes. I was like, this song owns. It fits with the style of level that you're in. It fits with the boss. But yeah, like you said, every other cool. boss that caps off the other levels, it's just the same one with a different moveset.
Oh my God, that's disheartening as hell.
No, it is, man. You'll fight multiple versions of it.
Oh no.
You'll fight versions that kind of suck you into a lava pit.
Right.
And it's the worst part of the game for me, those boss fights.
Yeah, it's it reminded me of fighting that same creature, I forget the name of it now, in Halo 5, where you just fight the same dude 3 times.
What do you mean, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that. But Hellsinger has a lot of promise. I want to finish it. It gives me Brutal Legend vibes, where even if the execution is a little bit spotty every now and then or whatever, the devs love metal,
yeah.
and they get metal. They get how stupid and over the top and fun and self-aware being a metal fan is. And it's not about, like, so, like, some people try and do, like, big bro metal stuff. I think metal is goofy and stupid, and 80s heavy metal covers are a lot of fun and make a game that looks like an 80s heavy metal cover come to life. And where you're playing as this character called the Unknown, who's just this female demon who just wants to kill stuff. And there's a bit of a story, as Troy Baker narrates it and everything. But, which I'm a massive fan of at this stage, doing his Joel voice, but a bit of a higher tenor. But it nails that feel of metal in a way that Brutal Legend did, and very, very few games do.
Yes.
Where they feel like the spirit of metal. That's such a hard thing to get right, and it's cheesy, but that's what metal is.
This is it. I would have to defer to you for that conclusion, because I don't have the authority to say one way or another. So I was actually, when I was playing it, I was interested to hear what you thought about it, because there's a metal novice. I was wondering whether it felt too cheesy, too much of a pastiche, or did it have the heart and soul, but evidently it seems to have the heart and soul.
Yeah, there's a bit. Even in that narration where Troy Baker says, because they're talking about like different entities, and then he says something about something being south of heaven. I was like, okay, yeah. Well, that's Pantera. And then when you're fighting the boss for one of the first times, she screams Ride the Lightning at you, right. Which is a Metallica album / song. So I was like, okay, yeah, be big and dumb and goofy and ridiculous. That's metal. But like, yeah.
Can we talk about Troy Baker, please?
You can, absolutely.
I don't want to shoot on the guy, right? Troy Baker, I need to clarify, is an amazing voice actor. Mm. He has given me some of my favorite video game acting performances ever. Mm-hmm. His Joel is incredible. I even love his Joker. He rivals Mark Hamill for me. It's incredible.
Totally.
The dude is incredibly talented. But the dude is also everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I'm playing a game, and I had this issue with Spider-Man Miles Morales, I just hear Troy Baker, and that's fine. But in a game like this, it almost takes me out, because I'm just imagining Troy Baker in a studio reading these lines out, and I don't get a sense of character with him sometimes. I just get him as an actor.
See, I feel like in this, because he's doing like a South American drawl, he's doing the Joel voice. It's just that it's a bit higher. It's not as low. But you could easily still hear him say like, hey, Ellie, let's do this or whatever. I feel like the version that, because he was in Miles Morales. He was the villain dude. Yeah. That's when it's just Troy Baker 101. That's like when Nolan North was everywhere as Nolan North 101. So the thing is with Baker, I feel like the Baker was everywhere post, it was in 2013. Like he was in Bioshock and Last of Us, and then he was in Final Fantasy 13. Like he was everywhere, and I feel like he did that speech at the video game awards where he was like, if anyone wants to get into voice acting, you can't, you wait for us to die, me and Noah, and then you guys can come in. I feel like he's not been in that much stuff, like Last of Us Part 2. So when I heard him again here, and I like the guy anyway, so I was like, oh, it's cool. But like, I feel like him being omnipresent is like this thing that was a few years. I thought he tried to address that.
Right.
But I guess he just has one of those voices where like, as soon as you hear him, it's like, oh my God, it's that guy again.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of an equivalent movie actor. Maybe someone like Matt Damon, right? If Matt Damon turns up in a movie,
right.
I like Matt Damon. I like the work he's
Bruce
done.
Bruce Willis.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But I can only see him as Matt Damon now. Right. And I don't think he plays characters as well as he used to. And that's kind of what the vibe I get when Troy Baker turns up. He's still capable of excellent work, but I don't see him embodying characters in the same way that he used to. And that was more of an issue with Miles Morales, where it just felt like Troy Baker coming in, not Troy Baker coming in to do a character.
I tell you what, the thing is, like, yeah, Baker definitely has that voice. That's why you get him in. Like, when he was playing Talion in the Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War games, that's just kind of just Troy Baker 101. However, what was the name of the game where he played that creature called the Maw?
That was great. Yeah, the medium. That was the medium.
He plays the medium, and you wouldn't even know it was him. It was like Nolan North, like, turning up as like David or whatever in The Last of Us and realizing it's him later. Troy Baker's turn is the Maw, which is like this weird, twisted, demonic thing, and he's stretching his vocal chords out. It's really, really cool performance. If he did more of those, I guess it would be a healthier way or a better recepted way for him to be in the industry.
I think so. And again, I may be asking too much because he is still doing that kind of work.
It's making the money.
100%. It's just like, yeah, that performance was such a surprise and so bloody good. Mm-hmm. It's like you've got all of these great characters within you, and I want developers to stop phoning Troy Baker up and asking for Troy Baker, if that makes sense. And that's, again, I'm trying to not shoot in him here. I think he's incredibly talented, like I say. It's just an oversaturation issue, I think.
I can see that. I think, for the other two games that we're going to touch on, we'll get through these a little bit quicker because both of these titles, I'd not spent that much time with them yet. Return to Monkey Island dropped yesterday, though, on Monday, which is the return of Ron Gilbert, first time he's done a Monkey Island game since, I believe, Monkey Island 2. It's been a considerable amount of decades. I don't know what your history is with the Monkey Island series, but it's one of the earliest game memories I have.
Right.
I remember playing through the original one with one of my friends, and it's just, I've always loved that sense of humor. Like those old LucasArts point and click games, and whether it's this or Full Throttle or Day of the Tentacle or whatever, all of them, that whole 90s burst of like adventure games was absolutely my jam. I didn't finish any of them back then because they were just so obtuse, and obviously that became a whole meme thing, or has become a whole meme thing, which even this new game largely addresses. Like when you first go into it, you can choose which difficulty level you want, which is, do you actually want to, you know, have hints and stuff, or do you want to have like hardcore or something? And it's like way more puzzles, way more obtuse stuff. There's also an option in the menu to turn on the writer's edit instead of the director's edit, where you'd get like every bit of dialogue they ever wrote, and they tell you, it's like, this is going to break the pacing, but it's everything we wrote. And it's like, cool, just give me that. Like, this is the dude's return, one of the veterans of the industry, one of the most important creatives in gaming history ever, returning to the franchise that made them or helped make them. I am loving the fact that this exists.
Yes.
Like, I absolutely love the art style. I get that it had a bit of a backlash at the time when it first got revealed, and Ron Gilbert, like, you know, had a whole bunch of backlash and left Twitter for a while. I think this thing is like charm and goodwill incarnate. I love that it exists. I love the story. It's like a whole thing about Guybrush Threepwood having a son, and the son's asking him about one of his other tales that he's been on, so he's recanting the tale of the time he returned to Monkey Island. It's a great payoff to where Monkey Island 2 ends, and I'm loving it.
I love to hear this, Scott, because I don't have any history with this franchise at all. I know that people who love it, love it. You know, I had a bunch of friends who were eagerly anticipating this game coming out on Monday or whenever it was, but for me personally, I don't have that investment. However, I would like to play it because it sounds incredible. It's gotten incredible reviews.
Great place
to start. Think it's great, or at least noteworthy, for a creator to come back after so long and do either a straight sequel or a spiritual successor and get it right, because we've had so many of those promises across gaming history. I mean, do I need to talk about Mighty Number 9, what happened with that game, where the creators are supposed to be coming back and returning, and we have incredibly high expectations in it. Those expectations aren't matched, but here it does sound, from all of the reviews that I've consumed, that it's a proper glorious return.
Yeah, this is, I was looking into the making of it, and Gilbert always had an idea for what he would do for the next Monkey Island game anyway, and it seems like that's the thing that sort of just came together through different conversations with people working at Disney. There was the whole thing across like the last sort of decade or so, obviously Disney buying up LucasArts and then kind of relaunching the studio and all the different IPs that came with that, and different conversations that happened in the background, but Gilbert always knew what he wanted to do if he was allowed to do another story, and then somewhere along the way, Devolver ended up being the publisher. Which you could not give it to a better publisher.
Yeah.
Like, Devolver could not be more creative first. I'm a big, big fan of Devolver. And like I said, it has like a more sort of unique art style that's a bit more like Broken Age, a bit more like what Double Fine are doing. Very motion comic kind of thing for the modern day. And obviously you have reworked versions of those characters that you grew up with in terms of the way that they look. I personally love that. I love the new LeChuck, the villain, like the way he looks now just looks great. And the way that the UI works, they have modernized that stuff. Like, you're not just finding an item, and then, you know, the way adventure games work where it's like, I have a fish.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to walk around clicking on everything, and your character's going to say, I don't think I can use that here.
This like, is what I was going
50
to ask.
Times. They've smoothed all that out.
That's great, because that's what put me off all of those classic adventure games. Mm. You know, Grim Fandango is one that I wanted to play forever,
yeah.
but I just could not get past the obtuse puzzles within mm-hmm, it. So mm-hmm. to hear that, that's been more modernized without sacrificing the series' identity, I suppose. That mm-hmm. to me is it's enticing Nectar. Me into this franchise.
Well, they apparently, during the making of, they apparently went to people who had never played a Monkey Island game and made sure they could get through it as well. I think that's what cool. the casual difficulty is based around. Now, I've gone with casual. I get that I'm a hardcore oldie, but I can't be bothered to scroll every single pixel of the thing. I just want to enjoy it. You know, in terms of, I thought I'd see what the casual one was like, and it's nice enough for me. There are buttons that you can push that'll just tell you where the interactive points on a given screen are, and then it's kind of on you to choose which item matches up with something. But that's enough of a middle ground for me. You also have a hint book that you can consult, and where you can ask for hints, which was in the remaster of Monkey Island when they put it on Xbox Live, which I think is a good middle ground. And there's also like a trivia book that you can find that just asks you like just questions about the history of Monkey Island. So if you want to just have fun being a fan,
yeah.
you can do that. It's just a very lovely package. And even the opening 40-45 minutes is very much a recreation / love letter to the original Monkey Island, which if you've not played the original in a while, feels very nice. And,
nice.
And knowing that Ron Gilbert is back at the helm, and it literally says, you know, written by Ron Gilbert and David Grossman, the fact that they're behind it just feels good. It feels good that it exists.
Dude, man, what I'm getting from this podcast and the podcast we did last week
yes.
is that, like, games are back, man.
Games might be back, yeah.
Games are around. They're orbiting us. We're playing them, and we're having a good time.
I'm loving the good times. Yeah, that's kind of why we titled the news. Last week we did a talking point on what it felt like coming out of the Nintendo-Sony conferences. And we initially went with, you know, these conferences just saved video games, or video games are back or something. I changed it over the weekend after I'd calmed down to... we need to talk about this week's video games. But there is something in the air. There's a lot to talk about. There's betas. There's conversations. Even the leaks have got people talking about things they're looking forward to.
Yep.
And it's exciting. We are sadly out of time, but the only other game that I was going to get to was Wolong Fallen Dynasty. We'll get back to that if you happen to check out the demo or whatever, because it's over on PlayStation. But it's very solid. It's a solid Souls game.
Dude, this is the thing. Well, this is where we could segue into our entire demo discussion, because
yes.
that's a game that I can't wait for, because Nioh I loved.
Same.
But I will not play this demo because the game is not out for months, but we'll save that conversation
yes.
for another time.
We shall. For now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.